Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Unlock jet lag mode.
Yeah? What time is it in your head and your heart right now?
Boy, I guess in my head it is 8 p.m. And in my reality it is 1 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seven off. What time did you wake up this morning?
I woke up very early. I slept 10 hours last night because the night before last, I was economy middle seating my way back from Africa.
Ask anyone and they'll tell you. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah. It was interesting. It was like a big project that I was working on in Dakar, Senegal, and there were a lot of organizations and different companies and groups of people. And like right on the last night, as we were all heading to the airport, one of the organizations like raised a concern that like some of us were flying first class and some were not. And I like as somebody who was not flying first class, I was like, I don't really like respect the choice to like in a big like work Slack meeting, essentially, like start throwing rocks about, you know, how the travel was booked, because it's not a great look. But also, yeah. I kind of hope like some emergency button gets hit and somebody releases like the funds that it would take to upgrade, like me and the dozen other people who aren't flying first class.
Oh, no. Yeah, because you knew at that point you were staring down the barrel of a middle.
Yeah.
Man.
One of the few scenarios where bulkhead seat backfires is when it's overnight bulkhead seat and you're sitting next to your wife because you don't have the armrest that flips up, you know?
Like, right.
You, like, the one thing you have when you're traveling with your spouse is you can use your spouse as a bed, you know? You can't do that with any other seatmate on an airplane. But, you know, we would have loved to, except for there's like an immovable, you know, armrest that has a tray table and a, you know, LCD screen tucked in it.
Wow, and your coworkers in first had no such problems.
Yeah.
God, I would feel like a real asshole if I were one of those people, and yet not too big of an asshole to relinquish my first class seat, probably.
Right. Yeah. So
wow. Brutal.
Yeah. It was a great trip, though. I highly recommend Dakar, Senegal. If anybody has the means and opportunity to get there, one of the great cities in my experience.
Sounds like it. You took a lot of great pictures.
I tried
to. Looks like a beautiful place.
I was working most of the time, so it wasn't like quite as photography rich a trip as I would have liked it to be. But
Look at you getting a video job, Ben.
I know. I have an extremely limited list of clients, limited to one client. And they do work in interesting places, and I'm always looking to add stamps to the old passport. So it was cool because it kind of turned into a subsidized vacation for my wife and I, because we had like a couple of days on either side of the jobby job part of it.
There you go.
And we went to a lake that's like super salinated. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's very salty. It's like way saltier than the ocean and even saltier than the Dead Sea. So you basically like float on the top of it.
Wow.
It's like really, really fun to be in. And they're like, you can do it for like 15 minutes, but then definitely rinse off or you'll get a disease.
Oh, good note.
Yeah. Like the people, there are people that it's so salty that they like use it to cultivate salt for cooking. And like the mud at the bottom of this lake is just like, it's like mud with salt crystals in it, like big chunky salt crystals.
Did it chop up your feet?
No, it actually kind of exfoliated them. They felt really great after I got out.
And then they both had to be amputated about an hour after getting out, right?
Right. Well, there are people that work at the lake, like cultivating salt, and they take salt up out of it and like put it in baskets and like rinse the mud out in the water and then dry it. And that's various versions of that are sold for various things.
When you'd go eat at restaurants, would that be the salt that would be on the table and seasoning your food and stuff?
I'm not sure, but they said that they could only like work in the water 2 days a week, and they had to like coat themselves with shea butter or something, you know, like something kind of impermeable to prevent like too much osmotic water loss.
You didn't have that kind of work week, but that didn't stop you from coating yourself in shea butter, huh?
No, yeah, I was well lubricated.
Wow, well, glad to have you back, Ben.
Yeah.
It granted me the rare week off of podcasting.
I know. Stuck Rob with a rapid, less than 24-hour turnaround on an episode of The Greatest Discovery.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another thing that I was there in Senegal, and I was like, I wonder if I can watch Star Trek Discovery on Netflix since I'm here. And I totally did.
Really?
Yeah, I like downloaded the episode on my iPad using like when I like logged into the Netflix app on my iPad. It was just like one of the shows.
Hmm.
And it says like a Netflix original series at the beginning of it, and
it's wow, really weird.
Yeah, and in like a kind of Star Trek-y font, like it's like such a strange mirror universe that we live in.
Yeah,
we have to watch it on CBS All Access.
So weird. Well, in an effort to get this to Rob's as quickly as possible, what do you say we get to it, Ben?
Let's do it.
It is what at one point was going to be the season finale for this season, but then late in the game, they split it into a two-parter. This is the first of those two parts. It's Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 13, Such Sweet Sorrow. Ben, it's an episode that gives us 15 minutes of cold open.
Yeah, it is a long-ass cold open.
Kind of wild, huh? We're at room temperature by the time we get the titles.
Yeah, and an episode this tense could only start with a beach hang. Sarek is soaking up some rays on the sandy banks of Lake Vulcan. And,
you know, the great thing about beaches on Vulcan is that every beach is public.
He chooses not to go topless, which I think is a mistake, you know, given the libertine nature of Vulcans.
Sure.
His Katra makes him realize that his adopted daughter is in big, big trouble.
It's a real Citizen Kane moment. Like they rack in on Sarek's face. He drops the snow globe.
Mm-hmm.
He says the name Michael.
Yeah, and then in a Ancien Andalou twist, a razor blade comes down and slices his eyeball open.
Oh, you know what? They would do that on this show. This show hates eyeballs.
Yeah, it's primarily an eyeball trauma show and secondarily a Star Trek franchise.
We cut directly to some evacuation scenes aboard the Disco, and in Star Trek Generations and in many other of my favorite Star Trek programming, I love an evacuation scene.
Yeah.
It's great.
And this one's fun.
Yeah.
We get to see like so much of the mechanics of how this works. And I don't know if we've ever seen, have we ever seen like a ship-to-ship evacuation quite like this?
No, it reminded me of the umbilicals that Starbases use to get onto and off of starships. Like
totally.
In TNG, you would see these ships from the inside of Starbases, and then there would be these corridors. It kind of reminded me of that, but I don't think we've ever seen anything like this on a show, how the ships kind of spoon together
yeah.
and deploy these things.
Really interesting to see like a very comparable, like a shot where you can actually see what the scale is of
yeah.
the Entrepreneur to the Discovery.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that this Discovery was like 10 or 20% bigger than the Entrepreneur.
Yeah, it was really neat to see them cozied up so close. Like the nacelle of the Disco fits neatly behind the shuttle bay of the Enterprise, for example. Like things just kind of fit interestingly.
Yeah, it's like Meg Ryan and Nick Cage in that movie about him being an angel. They just fit together perfectly. I also thought a little bit about like the design constraints of ships that have to have like four parallel points across their star drive sections that can be hooked together with these
yeah.
bridges. Like, do all Starfleet ships have the same, like, are they like Legos where they're all interoperable perfectly in this way?
I would like to know that. It would seem so.
We have a point of data.
Yeah, we have one, and we won't have a trend until we see this two more times.
Yeah, and I'm here for it, man. Evacuate yeah. all the ships. Let's see it.
Yeah. It's crazy how walking down one of these evacuation corridors makes the whites of your eyes look. Like later on, when Pike and Saru are walking down one, Pike's eyes are like aflame. They are
yeah.
crazy white.
Yeah, I think I would maybe counsel, if I was on the redesign committee for the escape bridge, I might counsel using like a physical barrier rather than a force field barrier for these things. Like I know that they're going to take a lot more space up in packing, but like how many times have like power outages been a concern for a ship? And like, do you really want to like worry about the power going out and just venting instantaneously into space because the bridge went away?
What you want to use is hotel conference room partition technology. We can turn a 40,000 square foot room into two 20,000 square foot halves through the deployment of this accordion style wall.
That way the backstage of your doctor conference can be well concealed from the participants.
Have you been watching this season of This Old?
We've only seen two episodes of
the mid-century modern one is what I'm talking about. Is that
yeah. We've only seen two episodes of that. We usually watch those on the weekends, so I don't know if anything's come out in the last couple.
Pretty great season, man.
Yeah.
Pretty great to have Roger back on the scene also.
Yeah. Looking a little bit worse for wear, but like bouncing back.
So we're going to make this hole 9'6".
Pike and Burnham are talking about the plan ahead, and they are kind of the last two remaining on the ship. This is another thing that I really love, is like when the evacuation's done, there's always two to sort of lock the door behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've got to do. They got to set the self-destruct sequence before leaving.
Burnham has a lot of, like, despite this being her idea, has some major misgivings about this being the solution to the problem. Because it is kind of looking like the saving her mom thing is becoming less likely. She's got one job to do, which is pack up the time crystal. And despite all of the admonitions she's been given against touching it, she just can't help herself.
Yeah, Pike in this scene is also still shattered from his own experience. Like, not strongly warning her against it, but just sort of, like, floating through the scene, detachedly.
The scene made me wonder what is stopping Control from sending its own copy of the Sphere Archive back. Like, do we know?
I mean, you asking that question made me wonder why Cantrelan doesn't go to Boreth, knowing where these things are from,
right,
and getting his own.
Yeah, Cantrelan is partly Leland, who already acquired one.
Right. Yeah.
Wait a second, but why did he destroy the suit? Like, why not just take the suit in lieu of destroying it? Oh, because it's coded to Ma Burnham's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The problems with time travel writing continue apace.
Right. Michael touches the crystal and sees a couple of bad things. But she doesn't get like a fully developed montage like we'll get a little bit later on.
No. We get a handprint scene with Saru and Captain Pike.
Insert dog penis fingers here.
Much to my chagrin, Pike's handprint does not line up with where his hand is on the thing. Uh-huh. Like, Saru's does a little bit, but I don't know. I guess it's maybe not supposed to be their handprint, because Saru's looks pretty humanoid, which is a bit of a normative design decision. Like, I guess you could be forgiven as a Starfleet engineer for assuming that humans are going to be the ones setting the ship to self-destruct.
It's metatarsal normative.
Yeah. Yeah. It did drive me kind of crazy that Pike's fingers weren't quite aligned, and I was like, just take the shot again. Like, just do it again with... You know, it doesn't even have to be Anson Mount's hand. It could use a hand stand-in, a hand-in, if you will.
Uh-huh. Could be a hand-in. Could be a couple of hands-in.
Yeah.
That's what you're feeling like.
Yeah. As many as'll fit. That's my thoughts on the matter. And then we go on to the Entrepreneur, which looks great. I feel like they did a really fun job of using some of the design elements of TOS Enterprise, like the kind of like meshy wall material that is occasionally deployed, like the color scheme and everything. But it is done in a modern way and on a modern budget.
It's crazy how they were able to pull this off. Like, it doesn't seem like it would work, especially color scheme-wise.
Yeah.
But much like in the 70s, there was a color orange that they painted their sports cars, mm-hmm, that went away at the end of the 70s, that you're starting to see again on modern vehicles. And it makes me feel the same way. Like, this color shouldn't work. But when you paint it on something like a starship, it just does.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I'm with you. I love all of the things they brought forward that seem miraculous now that we're seeing them. Like, those red grates, the turbo lift handle was so cool. Like, the shadows above the turbo lift doors on the bridge that were from TOS.
Yeah.
It was amazing to see those. All those little touches are great.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like the captain's chair is the same, like all the same like block shapes used,
yeah,
but just it looks slick and cool and new.
They got the people who did the touring bridge exhibit to make bridge buttons for this set.
Wow.
And they totally like used the original castings.
Cool.
And again, like just verbalizing that, that sounds dumb. That shouldn't work. Totally works. Like, yeah, there's a ring of those buttons around the entire bridge, and it totally fits.
Yeah. I mean, like, they spent a lot of money on this set. It's hard for me to imagine that the Enterprise doesn't come back into play frequently in the future, right?
I hope so. I mean, people petitioned the studio to create a series for Anson Mount and Captain Pike and the Enterprise. Like, these are people who don't know how petitions work and don't know how studios work.
And maybe, like, should be burning their democracy energy on other way more pressing issues right now.
And yet, I think it speaks to how people feel seeing a scene like this and experiencing what it's been like to be with Captain Pike for an entire season. I mean, I think he's earned a lot of goodwill.
Yeah. He has been great. Is your sense that one of the kind of running gags of Discovery will be that there's a bit of a new captain each season?
I don't know.
Like, are they going to settle on a captain? It doesn't seem possible to me.
Maybe that's the deal. But I think by the time we get to the end of this season, I mean, they may be in a position where that is the 10th most important question that they're asking.
Right. The other thing I wanted to talk about with this is how weird it is to see the kind of athleisure look of Discovery's uniforms up against the kind of go-go look of Enterprise's uniforms.
Right. Yeah.
like that, they did a good job of finding like a middle point for the Enterprise uniforms in terms of making them seem like they were issued by the same organization, but also looking a bit like the 60s television show.
It's not confrontational, but it makes you confront the idea because they're spending time together in this tight space.
Yeah, and everybody that works on the Enterprise wears like leather boots, and everybody that works on the Discovery wears like Air Yeezys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't even think of it, but the Discovery is such a laid-back ship in that way. Like, everybody's just wearing sneakers to work. It's kind of like the tech startup of Starfleet vessels.
Right.
To the Enterprise's like more traditional business setting.
Yeah, the dress code is a major selling point. That commissary, major selling point.
Yeah. They have so many different kinds of breakfast cereal. I tried to get a job at Bloomberg directing videos for them one time, and I like really needed the job at the time, but I was also like, I had deep misgivings about working for like a big media organization. And the one thing that about the interview that really made me feel like I might want to do it is how dope the free food available was.
Yeah. I worked for a company that charged for food on campus and charged a lot.
Damn.
And the food wasn't that good. It was a real bummer.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Well, so they get up on the bridge. Pike is back in the captain's seat, which is relinquished by Admiral Bob. His number one, played by Rebecca Romijn, kind of reiterates the holographic comms self-dunk that this season did on Discovery.
I think it would have been cool to have just a little bit more between number one and Admiral Bob.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that they wouldn't get along for some reason. Like, they seem like very intense people.
I mean, number one is depicted as being like an insanely competent officer, so.
Like, type capital A.
she's like, by the way, I created a fleet of fighter ships so that the last episode of this season will be very exciting. And he's like, good work.
That's a great hire right there. That goes back to the beginning for Pike.
Yeah.
You know, you want to surround yourself with the best.
So they pull out to kind of a safe distance to watch the disco self-destruct sequence complete its work. And it does not. Something wrong with the self-destruct.
They're like toggling the button off and on a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like holding it. Nothing's
Fuck,
happening.
Even in the future, nothing works. yeah, and this is a problem, but Pike is very unflappable, so he orders a volley of torpedoes, but the disco puts its shields up and seems to be invulnerable to torpedo fire. So this is about when Michael has her much more cogent time crystal acid flashback. And she actually sees a kind of a vision of the future in which the Discovery and the Enterprise are battling a bunch of Kentrelan ships. The Enterprise is in a really bad way with like an unexploded piece of ordnance lodged in its hull and no Farmer Hoggett and Quark to disarm it.
It always happens that way, right? Like just before a big event, you get an unexploded torpedo in your saucer.
Yeah.
And you have to just go out like that.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
What you want to do is get like one of those like masks, one of those face masks, you know?
Right.
Like maybe with like kind of like a lot of sulfur as an active ingredient. Just
in
dry it out.
In a pinch, you can use a really hot washcloth. Yeah. You know, kind of work that thing out.
Yeah. They say not to pop them, but it's so satisfying.
I know. Ben, Contrelin executes everyone on this bridge, like, savagely.
Yeah, it's a real beginning of Wrath of Khan, where you get to watch everybody you love die. And he, like, Darth Vader's Michael Burnham by the face, picks her up off the ground by the face, and he goes, "Where is the Spear Archive? What have you done with those plans?" And she goes, "We intercepted no transmission. This is a consular ship. We're on a diplomatic mission."
Oh, so many people are going to be happy because of you.
Yeah, I'm here to do that for them.
Contrelin sure does have an appreciation for the dramatic, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do it this way.
He has a Giorgio-level flair for it, I might say.
Yeah. Michael Burnham flashes back, like, sort of snaps back into the real.
Stop!
And she snaps back, like, to a little bit before when she left, right? Like, she snaps back to prior to the torpedoes going out, which...
Is this why there was a shot that was played in reverse? When they were shooting torpedoes at the ship? Did you notice this?
I did not.
So they shoot two torpedoes at the ship, and then they cut around the bridge personnel, Burnham being one of them, and they play that shot in reverse. The person behind Michael Burnham is walking backwards.
Oh.
And the audio is played backwards also. But then, in the very next shot after that, we're in forward time again.
So it's not like...
I feel like it's a mistake. I don't think they're trying to say something about it.
Well, if they're playing the audio in reverse, I feel that makes me think it's more intentional.
Yeah.
What's that terrible Christian Bale movie with Taye Diggs where he uses gun karate?
Equilibrium?
Yeah.
How did I have that on the top of my head? Jeez. That's so useless.
A lot of more important shit you could know, but you do know the title to Equilibrium.
God, so dumb.
There's a shot in that where Christian Bale and Taye Diggs get out of their space car, and the exhaust is like going back into the tailpipe, and it's one of those like, ooh, that's an embarrassing mistake. Like, we needed a shot of two guys getting out of a car, and we didn't have that coverage, so we had to reverse a shot getting into it.
That's great. And, like, no one gets into a car the same way they get out of it. That had to look fucking bizarre.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what a fucking great Taye Diggs role is the Way of the Gun.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Like, I think he's, like, sixth billing in that movie, but he is so great in it. Do you remember that scene where he's doing the hostage negotiation on the phone and he has to act like he's totally put out by what's being demanded?
That is such
it's
a crazy
one of my favorite
movie.
Moments.
My name is Winston. Winston Shakespeare.
The plan was suggested a couple episodes ago of why don't we like pump the time travel suit full of the Sphere Archive and send it into the future where Control won't be able to get at it. And it, when that was suggested, everybody was like, there was a lot of pushback on it, you know? There was so much concern that it would be going out of Control's reach, but also out of their control. So therefore too risky a move. But that plan kind of goes back to the top of the list, right? It's, let's send Discovery so far into the future that Control won't be able to get at the data stored in its computers.
We're really lucky that there's not a character with the last name Reach. Otherwise, the show would be impossible to talk about.
Make no sense.
Yeah. So they convene a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
They decide that they've got to make a suit because they have the plans for one. But it's probably just going to be a one-way trip. And also, there are two Red Angels, because they can tell that one of the Red Angels was piloted by Michael Burnham herself. And this conversation happened so quickly that it should be a total bomb dropped in the room. And it's not. It's just, it's like read as summary.
I mean, I think that we've kind of done the math on that already as viewers, right? Like,
yeah.
Dr. Culber was dead certain that the Red Angel was Michael Burnham, and then it wasn't Michael Burnham. The explanation for that was a genetic similarity. But it turns out that the genetic similarity is actually the reason that the suit can be rebuilt for her. Right. Not the reason that she's not the Red Angel. Because she is, man.
I like a lot of the things hinted at in this scene.
Yeah.
Michael recognizing that it's her and being unable to articulate her possible future reasons for doing the things that she is definitely doing. Like, that mystery is great.
And I also like just the swaggering confidence of Captain Pike in this moment, because he's like, everything that has happened with these red beacons so far has been intentional and designed, and I still totally trust that. Like, trust the process.
I love Pike volunteering for a suicide mission, knowing that he won't die during it, I think is a superpower that is so subtle here.
Totally.
Like, he wants the suit made for him. He knows it's not going to kill him in the process. He can't tell anyone.
Right.
I love it.
But there is one issue, which is they need 1.21 gigawatts of electricity to get back to the future. And, they don't have plutonium like they did before.
Ben, the only thing that can generate that amount of power is a bolt of lightning. What's that? A bolt of lightning.
What the hell is a gigawatt?
I think Giorgio has exactly two scenes in this episode, and both of them are fucking home runs. One of them is the moment where she proposes creating a supernova by detonating a bomb inside of a nova.
Yeah. Let's just take a nova and make it super.
Yeah. Killer move. And everyone just fucking makes fun of her.
Yeah, they're like,
I think that idea needs to be on the table.
That's a garbage idea, Georgia.
Where is Spock on this? That's a total needs of the many versus needs of the few situation. Like, if it comes down to it, I think you've got to take Giorgio's plan for action.
It would be really interesting to see him like realign in that moment with a Terran, you know?
Yeah, there's a logical sense to this proposal.
Yeah.
And fucking Admiral Bob. Fuck you, Bob. You were willing to destroy Kronosh like last season, so give me a fucking break.
They get a call that there's another signal. They got to run up to the bridge. This is the 5th of 7. They have a kind of like video game world map looking list of the locations of the signals up on the screen, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. So this is level 5, and I guess the last episode is where we're going to see what levels 6 and 7 are. I'm hoping for snow level and sewer level.
It's a very NES Dragon Warrior situation.
Yeah. This signal comes from a planet that your girl Ensign Tilly is quite familiar with.
That's right, Ben. It's Zahia. It's the home planet of Poe from the Short Treks episode.
I think this is one thing that's going to go in the W column for both of us, which was arguing for these Short Treks are probably going to be important for the season we're about to watch.
Yeah.
I think that's something we felt at the time. Maybe I'm just retroactively making myself smart.
I'd rather be lucky than smart, and I think that's what I'll take credit for this time around.
Yeah, but I enjoyed a lot about the episode that introduced the premise of planet Zahia and its leader. We're going to meet Poe one more time. But before we do that, Adam, Stamets has been tasked with rebuilding the suit, right? So he's like super duper busy racing around like a chicken with his head cut off in engineering.
Yeah, he's got a dress form standing up in engineering. He's got that guy from Project Runway telling him to avail himself of the bag and the Chanel. You watch that show?
I don't. I mean,
really?
I know that Tim Gunn is the presenter.
Tim Gunn is who I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that. Google knows that.
God, really fell down a circular stairwell there.
So, in a lot of ways, on brand for our show.
Yeah.
But anyways, Stamets is very busy, but not so busy that he doesn't have time to have a pretty intense conversation with Dr. Culber. The scene has me worried, Adam. It does make me feel like I may be doing a power hour.
I'm thinking I might take a break.
At some unspecified point in the future of this podcast.
That makes me feel great, Ben. I think I'm spot on with this.
I think it could be a head faint, though, you know? Like, make you feel like hope is lost before a cathartic end in the last episode.
I mean, as long as the plan is separating the two ships and putting one in the future and putting Culber on the Enterprise, I think the outcome has to be their separation. Did you think that Culber was saying that he's going to transfer to the Enterprise because he will soon be working for Dr. McCoy?
Is McCoy on this era of the Enterprise?
I don't know. But I love this version of Stamets being interested in transferring to a station or an academy. Like that's very comic book Stamets.
Yeah.
Which is another form of Star Trek Discovery media that feels fairly essential.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad we read those. Are there new Disco comics being put out?
Don't know. You know who would be great at Disco comics is our buddy J.K. Woodward.
Yeah, he should be doing those.
And devising more ways to kill us in the process.
Yeah, devising loaf we can be in. Jet Reno and Poe get to meet each other because they have a second McLaughlin group.
Issue two.
And this is where Poe does a bunch of flashy, big science energy stuff in front of everybody. And they're like, Jet Reno and Poe are quippy and withering in exactly the same ways in this episode.
Yeah, it's a real narcissism of minor differences happening. Poe is making an energy source. It appears she is the only one that understands it. Tilly is just sort of the girl that hands her the wrenches. And it looks very biological.
Existence is paused!
It looks like probably a 3D printer was used to make the prop.
It looks like it should be wet.
Yeah, like it's got like blood vessel realness. And it's really cool looking. It's really fun to see them kind of step out of Starfleet style design with this show. Yeah. Like I feel like when they go to make a Klingon place or make a prop like this, they really go nuts in a way that that feels like a new level of seriousness for Star Trek, you know? Like I can think of so many episodes of Greatest Gen when we were reviewing Next Generation episodes where like one thing that an alien has in his hand is like so impressive to us that we talked about it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because usually it's just a spiky bird or whatever.
Right. Yeah, this is not a spiky bird.
Way better than a spiky bird.
This is like the interface, right?
Yeah.
Like power goes into this and then out of it into the crystal.
Yeah, and that it is channeling a supernova amount of energy into the crystal. But one thing that is kind of established is that they won't be able to use the crystal once they do this once.
Right, it's a one-way trip.
This is going to be a big episode of goodbyes, and one of the big goodbyes we get is from Sarek and Amanda. They make a special trip of it. Do you think that they washed their shoes before they got in the van? And, you know, like, because they were walking around on the beach with shoes on. You never really get the sand out of shoes once it's in them.
I kind of like the memory of a sandy place. Like,
yeah.
That's never bothered me. Feels good.
Yeah.
How in the hell did Sarek and Amanda beat Kontrelin to this point in space?
I don't know. I feel like this series of Star Trek, even more than any other, plays so fast and loose with how much time it takes to get places.
Yeah.
Like, even more than TOS, which, like, you know, in subsequent Star Trek series, the idea of leaving the Quadrant became a huge deal.
Sure.
And in TOS, like, they routinely, like, go to other galaxies and shit, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, we're, like, exploring the Andromeda Galaxy this week on the show. And the timing of everything feels utterly convenient to, making dramatic pressure increase.
I suppose if you have to sacrifice one for another, then, like, this is what you do. you've got to sacrifice that for the sake of story conflict or story interest or yeah. or whatever.
Like, I guess it depends on whether you're a hard sci-fi or a soft sci-fi.
Right. Well, as I get older, I find I'm becoming more and more of a soft sci-fi person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, that's nice. It's nice to hear.
This is the part of the episode that begins the Michael Burnham goodbye tour, Ben.
Yeah.
She touches all the bases, beginning with the bridge, in a moment that I found genuinely affecting and angry-making. Because think of 20 episodes into season one of TNG. So if this is the 28th episode of Star Trek Discovery,
yeah.
how much affection do you feel like you had for anyone in the TNG crew at the episode 28 mark? I don't feel like I would cry for anyone. This is around, it's got to be around the time that Tasha Yar died, right?
She died way earlier than that, because 28 would have been like a couple episodes into season two of TNG.
Yeah, I would not have been as affected by that, and I was not as affected by the Tasha Yar death as I really was for this goodbye. No one's dying in this moment.
Yeah.
But the strength of Sonequa Martin-Green's performance here, like, she's got some kind of cheat code. The show cheats because this isn't earned sentimentality, but it fucking works. It landed on me really hard. Did it work for you?
Yeah. I think Michael Burnham is a great character, and I really like her. And, this is not even the first time this season we've been sold the bill of goods of this character is going to be gone forever now.
Mm-hmm.
When they actually follow through on it, it's really going to hit like a ton of bricks, I feel
right.
like.
Yeah.
They've cried wolf many times now.
Yeah. With actual tears.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crying on this show. A lot of crying and a lot of screaming. I feel like this is a show that's about emotional extremes.
Melodrama is the way we process emotion as a society. Yeah. Not against it. I think it's unfortunate that melodrama is used as a slur a lot of the time.
Right. Tilly gets her turn to say goodbye to Michael. It's nice to see Sylvia Tilly back on the show after a little bit of an absence, I think.
Yeah.
She's quippy and a little bit of a punchline again in this episode, but like her relationship with Poe, I think, is a strong part of the episode. And her sadness about Michael Burnham does not reach the depths that I expected it to. Like, she's kind of a pro about it.
Right. Like, more emotionally intelligent than I think she gets credit for a lot of the time.
Right.
We get a round the horn of a bunch of bridge characters writing letters to loved ones, kind of paying their final goodbyes. And they take on a lot of interesting angles, you know, like Owo clearly is writing a letter home to a family that was not necessarily thrilled by her decision to join Starfleet. Seems like Detmer's family was more on board with that. Saru expressing sincere love and affection for his sister, who we've actually gotten to meet. One of the few characters who's, you know, being addressed in this,
yeah.
in this montage that we know a little bit about.
It's very anti-Robert McKee, this montage here.
Stamets writing a letter home that shows some very poor emotional judgment, which is very on brand for him.
Yeah. That's what you want to read if you think your brother has died or is on some mission that has flung him into the future. You really want him to accuse you of being your parents' favorite.
What an awful final letter to receive.
That's great.
Oh, man, you can just tell that Stamets' funeral is going to be a lot of people getting up to speak about how, you know, Stamets was Stamets, you know,
yeah.
for good or ill. He was really himself, the funeral version of saying Stamets was a big asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how to call someone an asshole diplomatically. We get a great big kiss between Michael and Ash Tyler.
Yeah. They've been smooching a lot for two people that are not technically dating.
A lot of cry kissing from Michael Burnham.
Yeah, a little salt to kind of season the kiss.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about Stamets and Culber and what we expect for them as far as whether or not we want them to be together and if they will be. But yeah. we don't talk nearly enough or as equally about Michael and Ash. Is that because we care less about whether or not they will endure as a relationship, or do you think the show is doing something that makes us care less?
I think that it felt so definitive that they'd broken up but earned back some mutual esteem at the end of season one.
Yeah.
They didn't, it seemed like, you know, maybe the door was left open a crack for them to get back together, but it wasn't going to be the primary concern of a story arc.
Mm-hmm.
And it never felt like a B or a C story of will they, won't they. And I think the Stamets-Culber relationship really has been an arc this season. They've written with a lot of intentionality toward it.
That's a great answer. It's never felt like it's from The Office. This isn't an Office romance.
Are you talking about an Office romance like the show The Office, or just a romance in an office?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm talking about either.
Yeah. I never watched The Office, so.
Huh.
I watched, I think I watched one season of the British one, but.
I'll stick a pin in that. Pike's ready to go. He's on the bridge, ready to say his goodbyes, but he's got to have a We Are Starfleet Captains speech and then go around the horn saying a nice thing about everyone. And this
scene made me feel like my wife deciding to head to the restroom when we've heard the announcement that our flight is boarding, you know, because he's making this speech while the countdown timer is on the wall behind him saying how close the shit is to hitting the fan.
Right.
I was just squirming in my seat. Like, don't pause for dramatic effect right now, Chris. Great sense of timing, though, because he starts it at about like 7 minutes and 30 seconds and they walk off the bridge with a solid 4 minutes left to go.
It's hard when you're hired at a workplace right as someone is retiring or there's like a big event of this kind.
Yeah.
And that person feels obligated to say something nice about their team, and then they get to you and you're Lieutenant Nilsson.
Yeah.
And all they can say is like, boy, you really stepped in for the spot of someone that we really loved and missed deeply. Like, way to work their station.
Way to kind whatever. Of make it more about the person they're replacing than them.
Pike has been I want to say Pike's been almost perfect in his ability to lead and treat the people in his care, but this was a rare miss for him, I thought, with Lieutenant Nilsson.
He clearly pre-wrote the thing he said to Michael Burnham
and
forgot to write anything for Nilsson or Spock.
In his head, he's going around the room. He's like, oh my God, Nilsson's like third up after this. I get, God, what's it going to be? Think, Pike, think.
It's those holiday presents that you leave to the last minute, you know?
Like, yeah.
You've gotten something great for your mom, got something great for your wife, and then, you know, a week out from Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, and you're like, fuck, what am I going to get Dad? I don't know. Apple Watch?
You really get to see Pike's tunic up close, and it looks like the leather from a pair of Timberlands. It looks really heavy.
Yeah, it looks like it might be hot.
Yeah, Saru cuts him off in a fashion that I think you were aching for, Ben, because as the timer's counting down, Saru's like, come on, dude, we gotta...
There are bathrooms on the airplane.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can use them before you take off.
The space around the ships is kind of filling with these weaponized shuttles and worker bees in a fun way, too. Like, they're cutting to exterior in a way to insert some interstitial time in between all of these goodbyes.
Yeah, and Giorgio is actually the one that walks Pike and Ash Tyler down to the transporter room to send them off, send them to the entrepreneur to make their last stand in this coming battle. and picks this moment to drop to Pike that
I'm Taryn, by the way, from your mirror universe.
Very interesting scene, I thought.
I thought it was great. I love the Pike wink.
Yeah.
Pike knew the whole time.
What mirror universe?
Why did he know?
Because he was briefed on what happened to Lorca when he took command of the Disco in the first episode.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. He was, I remember him clearly saying, like, he was briefed. He was briefed on everything, even the secret stuff. So I took that to mean that that included the mirror universe.
And then why would Giorgio have decided that he needs to know that in this moment?
That's the question. That's the main question to me. I don't know.
My jet lag addled brain can't get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. There's a moment toward the end where Jet Reno gets her turn at the time crystal and then sees maybe more clips than anyone about the future ahead, including the saucer section pimple.
It's interesting to me that they got the same premonition from the crystal. Because what Pike got was something super different.
Yeah, right? It'd be weird if all of them saw the Pike premonition.
Ugh, gross.
Like, now I kind of understand why Pike's been brooding so much lately. Jeez. How do you think he shits in that thing?
Yeah, you see just a cavalcade of characters finding some time to put one hand on Pike's shoulder and make, like, sympathetic eye contact with him. Like, hey, sorry about that premonition.
Yeah, good luck trying to We Are Starfleet Pike post-premonition. It's going to be hard. I don't think he's going to fall for that.
The captain of the Entrepreneur is in his seat. Acting Captain Saru is on board the Disco, and he's ordering everybody to prepare for battle. We fade to black as the 30 Section 31 ships surround the two good guy ships.
Were you expecting a to be continued? If they were ever going to do it, Ben, it would have been here.
I know.
Like, get him up on the screen. Contrelan's up there.
Right.
Making a threat. We rack in to Saru's face.
Yeah.
He says, fire. Come on.
Come on. Well, so here is an interesting difference that I discovered in watching this on Netflix, Adam, is no next time on Star Trek Discovery.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a broadcast television network technology that Netflix really doesn't fuck with, and so it was I think I understood that instinctively, but it didn't, like, as a thought technology, it hadn't really even clicked into place until I watched this episode on Netflix, that's why we get those little vasectomies at the end of every episode.
So as a trained American television viewer, did you miss it?
No, I think it's better to cut to credits.
Wow.
Yeah. But
Did not expect that to be your answer.
I came home and watched it on CBS All Access, so I got that. But before we get to any of that stuff, Adam, I have a question. Did you like this episode?
Yeah, I really did. I liked it a lot.
It's an interesting episode because it's, like, not really... It's all table setting, you know?
This episode full-on choked me up a couple of times, and I can't believe it had that power over me.
Yeah. I mean, I watched it on a plane, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Airplanes make you cry.
Yeah, that's true. They do Eyes Up three times in this ep, and every single one of them was affecting.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Like, it seems like this episode is making the case for standing at parade rest being the Starfleet equivalent of saluting somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that too. Really strong episode. Like, it's... Things are really gathering to a point here that I'm very excited to see.
Yeah, I feel the same way as you do.
You were talking about the preview to the next episode. What do you think is going to happen from here?
Contrelan is overcome in a way that sends him into a far-flung part of the galaxy, A, which leaves the door open to him being the Borg progenitor, but not not in a way that specifically connects that.
So this would be like a Delta Quadrant situation?
Right. I think they will imply it but not say it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Stamets and Culber get back together. I think the decision by Ash Tyler to recommit himself to Section 31 will something will come out of Michael Burnham's mouth about how that means they can't be together ever.
Whoa.
Like, I think that she'll understand his reasons for doing it, but I think that she won't be able to make an effort anymore. And I think that we will have I think the end of the episode will be some fun goof around like the end of last season that teases who the captain will be on the next season. But I don't think it's going to be Saru or Michael Burnham.
Neither.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, let's hear from somebody who is coherent and can think straight. What are your predictions?
I agree with your prediction of Borg progenitor. I think that's a neat idea. Should they win this battle, or should the mission succeed in that way? I think Calypso gives us an interesting hint about what could happen once the ship is dropped off into the future. Like, in my mind, I was like, well, the crew can't go with Discovery into the future because that ship is empty when we see it in Calypso. But then I thought, of course they can. The crew can go into the future and spend season 3 there, where together with Michael Burnham, they work with Michael's mom to create a technology that they can use to go back to their original time and leave the ship behind where it's found in Calypso.
Wow.
Like, I think that's what season 3 is going to be. I think season 3 is going to be the most future Star Trek we've ever seen.
I have an insane prediction.
Uh-huh.
I don't think this is what they're actually going to do, but what if all of the stuff about new Picard series has been a smoke show to conceal that Picard is the captain on season 3? Ha ha.
I also wonder if, and this is not to say that this is successful, but I think the groundswell of support for Anson Mount and Captain Pike will be such that by the time Star Trek Las Vegas comes around, there will be an announcement about a series that features Pike.
What about a movie?
And all the stuff that they built.
Yeah.
This Enterprise set is too good to destroy. They've got to keep it.
That's $1 million set, probably.
I think something's happening. And I think that's what's going to happen. Also, Culber and Stamets not getting back together.
Wow. Well, we'll find out the result of our terrible bet.
Yeah.
In a week.
I'm excited.
Before we find out, do you want to check, see if we have any Priority One messages?
Yes.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from famed producer Bruce Dickinson. And the message is for Ben and Adam Cult. You see where this is going, right? This is an SNL reference.
Oh, yeah.
The message goes like this. More jazz horse. And that's it. Message received.
Yeah.
Famed producer Bruce Dickinson. We're trying to build up some show runway here, and once we do, I think I'll have more time for Twitch streaming. But for now, I'm going on Twitch hiatus for the short term, I would say.
Well, I mean, wasn't last week's Greatest Discovery a Jazz Horse update?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's nothing stopping us from playing the game and updating each other. That's,
yeah. I mean, there are things stopping us. All of the huge amounts of work we have made for ourselves.
The relationships that we have in our lives.
Yeah.
Like, there's no shortage of barriers to this.
Adam, our second Priority One message is also of a personal nature. It's from Kevin, and it's for Ben and Adam. It goes like this.
You don't understand. I didn't just watch one episode. I watched all episodes, everywhere, even Enterprise. There's only one podcast, or maybe two, to fit my crime. Thanks for being there for me every week.
Wow.
Oh, that's fun.
This person did a lot of work.
Yeah.
All episodes everywhere. One day, far into the future, we'll be able to say that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if we'll ever do an animated series.
Yeah. No. We'll be old men at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Really old.
Very, very old.
They'll be making us watch different cartoons in the old folks' home by then.
Well, if you would like to leave a Priority to One message, you know what to do. Head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. We really appreciate it.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. When they get onto the entrepreneur and the self-destruct doesn't work, it really feels for Saru like one of those things where sometimes you do something in business that very publicly fails in front of all of your coworkers, and the first thing out of your mouth is an attempt to kind of cover for that failure, but everybody knows that you kind of blew it. And that's kind of what Saru goes through in this moment. That cover your ass of like, what? That's impossible, when the self-destruct fails.
Saying that's impossible about something that you failed at, I think is great.
Yeah.
I want to do that more often.
I want to have that amount of self-confidence.
There's something wrong with your audio, Adam.
Yeah.
That's impossible. That scene made me think a lot about what I would take with me if I were to abandon ship. And there is a guy who brings a potted plant with him as he is leaving the Discovery. And that's my Shimoda. I just think that's great. Of all of the things, like, the people have loaded up their Pelican torpedo-shaped suitcases with valuable items.
Yeah.
But to one person who we don't see... it's a bird of paradise plant, I think. Better take that with you.
Interesting that Saru does not take a potted plant, but instead a knife.
Yeah. Hey, here's a prediction.
Hmm.
Saru stabs Contreland with a knife.
Oh, damn. I really like that.
Yeah.
Would it do anything, though?
You've been pruned.
I mean, he's gotten hit by a lot of phaser blasts.
Yeah. There would have to be... like, maybe there's a thing, like the way that the gray goo was magnetized a couple episodes ago. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if there's a way to freeze Contreland and then stab him in such a way that he dies.
Beam an MRI machine over to his ship.
Yeah. And then Saru looks into the view screen and he's like, stay completely still.
We could just go now, right? Rob can take it away.
It's time for Ben's nap.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned at the
Daddy
end of this
needs to
episode
go
of Star Trek Discovery. Thanks for spending almost an entire second season with us. We're very excited to bring you the season finale of season 2 next week. And with that, we will give it to Robs for production. Thanks, Robs.
Thank you.
The greatest discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast, hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison, and it's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show. And a nice free way to support the show is to head on over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. All right, thanks. We'll see you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.